Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
What's happening in the newest season of Fallout? And how has school spirits been going? Did you even know it existed? Because I didn't. We're going to find out that much more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests of the geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley, as we're going to go through another What's New episode. Today, I am joined by, of course, Leah. How's it going, Leah Robinson?
I'm doing well, as we talked about, just preparing for the snowpocalypse that will or maybe will or will not happen.
Yes, F's in the chat for everyone down there. And, you know, in the Southeast right now, we're suffering that thing that, you know, the northern part of the country does every single year. And yet when it happens to us, it's the end of days. Sign your families away, you know, try and get all the bread and milk before, even though it's going to go stale if the power goes out. But we don't think about that part.
Why the bread and milk, too? I just need to know. What are we doing with those things?
I don't understand it. The pack mentality that comes out of this is what we have to do. It's like, oh, okay, couldn't you get canned food or something? Or that would actually be worthwhile.
I grabbed some soup and I was like, we'll figure it out.
You know what? It's fine. We've lived the previous ones. We'll live through this one. Even if the power goes out again, even as we were talking about earlier, if Duke Energy decides it's going to take 17 weeks or whatever for stuff to get done, you know, eventually the power will come back and we'll be able to live again like regular people. So yeah, that's what's going on in our lives. But actually, Leah, why don't we go ahead and discuss like our lightning round here of like the smaller stuff that we don't really want to focus on, but like we just got to get it out. Something else besides our main topic today you've been getting into.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you guys, and I haven't seen the episode, but I'm assuming you've talked about Stranger Things. I did just finish Stranger Things as well. And that's been really, I thought it ended quite well. I have thoughts on it. I have been catching up with Doctor Who. I feel like I'm forever catching up with Doctor Who. But we're getting closer to the controversial season that we'll have to talk about. I think it's only controversial with you and Joshua, though, Christian. So I've been watching... I've been doing those two predominantly. Of course, I'm always doing horror. I've started a new kind of horror series with Ryan Doze, who's been on your podcast before. And so we've been revisiting some favorites. It's not theology, which is kind of a weird thing for me. It's just the movies. And we've done, we did Poltergeist and 28 Days Later, which, by the way, hey. 28 Days Later, like, really holds up. It's a good one.
Absolutely, like, it does.
It does on a level of, like, I haven't seen it since it came out, which must be, like, early 2000s, I'm guessing. But, like, Danny Boyle, like, did that movie. I don't know the exact time. This is where Ryan
comes in. It's like 04-ish.
Yeah, I think so. But he filmed a lot of that on, like, 35mm, and it looks, you'd think that it would make it look old, and it does, but there's something like that it needs to look that way. So anyway, I've been revisiting a lot of that, and that's been really fun. How about you?
I will be seeing the Bone Temple in a bit. I have less than favorable opinions on the first 28 years later compared to Joshua. We walked out of that theater together having differing opinions. Imagine that. So I'm interested to see where they're going with this.
Ask you a question. So there was a one before the Bone Temple? I didn't know that.
Yeah, 28 years later.
28 weeks later, but
That was going to be like a plan. 28 months. Wait, sorry, no, 28 days, 28 weeks are the first two.
Yeah.
Then the first one came out of the new three sequels last year.
Oh.
And Bone Temple is the second one is releasing, has already released as of the time of this recording. Mm-hmm. So yeah, all that to take care of. So it left me with a bit of sour taste, but they can win me back. I've heard good things. So I want to see what they're cooking up with that. So that'll be up there. But also on the horror side of things, I saw Primate last week, which was
that scary? Okay. Oh, it was okay.
I mean, if it looked younger Christian were seeing it, yes, scary. Absolutely. But like, I guess I've become not numb, but like used to the genre, I think. So very few things like scare me anymore. And I'm not saying that I'm so big and tough. Like, no, it's just kind of after watching so much, it kind of runs together. But it was a fine film. It's like a maybe 6.5, 7 out of 10. I mean, yeah, worth watching, not worth. I mean, like, it's never going to be in my top 10 list. I'll put it that way for the year.
It looked very jump scary, which is a different genre to me than like
there's plenty of jump scares there.
Yeah, I was going to say, because sometimes I'm just an anxious human as I drink my coffee. So I can get, like, the jump scares can get me when, like, the ideas maybe are not scary.
Right, there's definitely some plenty of good tension, I would say, in the film. The idea of, like, you know, we've all heard reports of people trying to have, like, chimps as pets. And, like, yeah, it can work for a while until it doesn't, you know, because they're not domesticated in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, they explain it in the film why it happens, but yeah, it's fine. I mean, I have no like big gripe against it. It's a popcorn flick. Just watch it and have fun.
I will say another TV show that I think we should talk about at some stage is From. It's not new, but it's I want to put that in the sand as well, because that's a really good one. It's been going for a while, so it's not like a what's new, but like I it's something I think would be fun to talk about.
I had covered I think the second season forever ago on a what's new. But when I think third season's coming out, right? In June or July, somewhere during that time.
I think it's
unless
maybe
I'm misreading things.
No, I think it's maybe in, is it in the fourth or maybe third season? I think you're right, Christian. I think you are. I think it is the third season because they take a long time.
Yes. Modern TV, everyone. If that comes out, well, when it does, I am more than welcome. More than happy to talk about that with you. Because that has scared me in the past. The other thing that I have from our quick lightning round is, it's not really quick, but you know, we're the ones talking, so I don't expect it to go quickly, is 12 Months, the newest book in the Dresden Files series released. I have not managed to open it yet, but it is on my desk. I am ready to read it. I adore this series very much. TG and I have talked about it in the past on another separate episode, so I'm hearing good things, and I'm ready to read more. There have been some graphic novels done in the world of that. Yeah. Of the Dresden Files. They're pretty good too.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
All right. So those were our lightning round choices. Today we're going to get into the meat of this. We have two big ones, the newest season of Fallout, and of course a new thing to me, like I said earlier, is School Spirits, which I read a brief synopsis of the idea, and I'm interested to see where you go with it when we get there. But we're going to start with Fallout. So you had mentioned earlier that when we were texting about this, you're not into it at all, but do you have any idea what it is?
Well, I did what you did, which is I looked up the synopsis. So it sounds like is it like a post-apocalyptic situation? I mean, it is called Fallout, but I mean,
This is based off of the game series.
That's maybe why it sounds familiar. I live with a gamer, so, I'm kind of much like 28 Days Later. I'm into these sort of like, what do we do when, speaking of the snow, we've come full circle. Oh my gosh, this is great. What do we do when the things that are the day to day are gone and we have to figure it out?
That's a huge part of this series, because basically these are a couple of games released originally in the late 90s, early 2000s, where I have not played them because they're not my kind of game. I got into when they came more RPG-ish. The idea being is that U.S. and China, we had a war in 2077. Bombs were flown from both sides, nuked the world to hell. And now you're in the aftermath of that several years later. Your people, depending on the game, pretty much almost all of them start with a character in a vault, which is a location created underground where people survive the nuclear war. And you learn along the games, like who was behind the creation of the vaults, like why were some vaults created as like control vaults, why were like really bad experiments done in them. And one of those people behind them is an entity known as Vault-Tec. They're the ones who designed them, but they were also, as we find out, working alongside the secret part of the government. I'm laughing because I'm just remembering a conversation I had with Andy, Will, and TJ on Comic Book Catch-Up about how difficult it is to explain the X-Men. Now I'm doing that with a video game. And it's like, you know what? It is what it is. I'm going to throw a lot of proper nouns your way today. So,
look, sometimes sorry about that. In the universe, things just are. They just are.
So you find out that this group called the Enclave, which is the secret part of the government of the United States, the remnants of it, who knew things were going to go off, the war was going to happen. So they prepared for years to once reclaim the United States, because every state's kind of fractured. You know, we have no like centralized government anymore. So the original games take place West Coast. The Bethesda games take place on the East Coast, Washington, D.C., Boston, Massachusetts, Massachusetts area. The series itself, the TV series, takes place on the West Coast. And we have our group of people here. We've got a member of the Brotherhood of Steel, who is like they're kind of knights, but they've also kind of lost their way. Their goal was to protect technology, make sure no one could abuse it. And of course, people are people, and that kind of got corrupted. We've got Lucy, who is our main character. She's the one who's lived in a vault her entire life, so she's never experienced the wasteland. But after something horrific happens there down there, she's forced to leave the vault and experience the top world for the first time. I almost said upside down because we said Stranger Things earlier.
So are they on because of the fallout, they've had to move underground in these vaults? That's the idea. They're living there. They're not just hiding out there.
That most of those people are descendants of people who fled to the vaults after the bombs fell. So most of them are radiation free. And then you've got people who lived on a surface and they were affected in different ways. People just got a little hardier. Other people became known as a ghoul, because fallout science works on like your 50s, you know, monster kind of media sci-fi of like, doesn't work on actual science. It works on science. Like anything that could be fantastical, it kind of happens that way. So people, when they're affected by radiation, can turn to things called ghouls. That's another one of our main characters who lived before the bombs. And it's 200 years after the fact.
With you.
And you find, he kind of is trying to track down his family, who he knows were working with some of the people, what his wife was, who may have caused the bombs to fall in the first place, but they've been preserved in cryostasis. So he's trying to figure out where they're at. And of course, we've got Dog Meat. You always have a dog in the game, and he's always named Dog Meat. It's never the same dog. It's always the dog named Dog Meat. And he's just the most loyal canine companion.
Oh, no. I don't like it when they bring the animals in.
I will say, I know some people are more sensitive about that. Very few bad things have happened to Dog Meat in the show. I think they know their audience, and I think putting the dog in peril may be a bit too far, even in a world as evil sometimes and as wacky as Fallout can get. So a first season happened with all these characters coming together, realizing the organizations they worked with or associated with aren't as perfect as thought they were. But also Lucy from the vault, her dad was the administrator of that vault, the overseer, they call it. And if I'm remembering things correctly, that sounds right. It's been a while since I've watched season one, because there's been multiple years between seasons. Not my fault. And found out that he is not as good a guy as she thought he was. And in fact, is also from pre-war. He was kept in stasis. And there's three different vaults they have that are like connected to each other. And the vaults that he came from are people who were like upper management with Vault-Tec, who would periodically come in and take control of the other vaults to make sure that the experiment they were running on them was done well.
No, he's a Vault-Tec.
Yes.
Hello, guys. I really hate to interrupt, but my name's TJ, and I'm here to tell you about our new merch. We have incredible new stuff with Fourth Wall. We have just partnered with them as a new store. They have a lot more to offer, which means we have a lot more to offer. We can now offer you beautiful Comfort Colors t-shirts. They're so comfy. I wear mine all the time, and we've got it all now. Cups, hats, backpacks, pajamas. If you want your Systematic Geekology pajamas, you know where to go. My personal favorite is actually our Throne of Geeks shirt. It is Comfort Colors, you know, blue, black, green, red, orange. And the shirts are just so nice. And the shirt itself, we've got the Throne of Iron geeked out, because, you know, that's our brand. We've got Mjolnir on there, the Buster Sword, Trident. basically just the coolest weapons from our favorite properties are on the shirt instead of a bunch of normal boring swords from the boring series Game of Thrones. So check that out, and thank you.
So the jig is up. He has to flee. Now, season two is where we pick up with that. He's gone to Vegas, which in Fallout New Vegas, one of the video games made by Obsidian, who was hired by Bethesda to make another game there, was under control of an autocrat named Mr. House. And he was also pre-war, but he put himself in not stasis, but like in a life support unit. So like he's still alive, but like he has like an, almost an AI kind of like controlling Vegas. And you have the opportunity of like going for like the new California Republic, which is kind of this more democratic, but very flawed government. You have the opportunity to go independent and say, you're going to be the one to take over the entire city of Vegas. You have the option to go with Mr. House and be kind of more libertarian with it. and you have free business and all that. Then you have Caesar's Legion, which is kind of the more, more like the Roman Empire reborn inside of the Southwest. And all the bad and good that comes with that.
It's nice to know that humans have learned from history and that we're doing new and inventive things as opposed to repeating old things.
And that's one of the things of the games in the series itself is that humans continue to make the same mistakes of the past, no matter how much time has gone. You know, one of the main like theses of the game series is that war never changes. Yeah, you can always develop a new weapon or you can develop a new style of fighting, but war has been a thing humans have experienced for years. So you can launch a bunch of nukes at someone. Well, people will find a way to wage war after that fact. You know, was that old quote about, I don't know how World War III will be waged, but World War IV will be waged with like sticks and stones and, you know, stuff like that. I butchered that quote, but it's kind of the same idea.
No, I mean, I teach history as well as theology, and it's just painful to watch us do the same things over and over and over and over again in different players, but the same things. Yeah.
So this season has primarily been built around trying to find Lucy's dad and the different conflicts between our different people, because they've fractured into multiple different groups, like Maximus, our Brotherhood of Steel, is trying to do what he can there, but he ends up becoming pretty much too much of a murder hobo for his own good and causes problems trying to do the right thing. Then the ghoul has his own thing trying to get back to his family. So he'll betray Lucy if he needs to. While at that same time, like Vegas itself seems to have fallen. We'll get to that in a while and why people are very upset about that. And like learning, because one of the things that Hank wants to do, her dad, is pre-war, they were developing this thing to where they could like just put this thing on the back of your neck and they would literally brainwash you and do whatever they wanted. It wasn't perfected then. Now he's trying to perfect it. And we see in our latest episode. Why? Because you get to tell people what to do and they'll do it.
Oh, my God.
They'll be super happy to do it.
Okay, cool.
So as we see, like all these different warring factions that I mentioned earlier, almost every single one of them has a representative in our latest episode where they're doing like office work together. But like they're so happy and cheerful, like they're under one banner. Isn't that great? And that's kind of the question I want to ask. We can get to other stuff later on. What's so wrong with wanting to control the world? Like, Leah, like, what's so wrong with unity?
I mean, well, and it's a question. I had a student ask me, you know, in a class once, why is free will such a good thing? Like, maybe we don't need, because I kind of was lamenting about what I was lamenting to you, which is the sort of, we keep repeating. And one of my students was like, well, maybe humans don't deserve to have free choice. And I was like, okay, I see where, and it was interesting because the way they presented it was kind of like what you're saying is, you know, would we do better if we did just have someone kind of telling us what to do? And this has been an argument with a lot of dictatorships through the years is that, you know, people do better when, this is their argument, is that we do better whenever we're told, you know, and we fall in line and, you know, all of this other stuff, great catastrophes don't take place and all of that. I mean, I don't think it's the human condition, whether you take us from a theological perspective or not. I don't think humans, it won't last is what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't think it's something like someone's going to break rank at some stage. Yep. I don't, unless we have something like you were talking about there's a reason why that Hank, you said maybe is creating that thing to control us because unless we are externally manipulated, I don't think that humans are able to fall in line like that. I just don't think we're wired that way. No matter where, you know, what kind of thing you grew at, you know, I've been to many communist countries, some dictatorships along the way, and you always have those little pockets of rebellion. Like, it's, you know, humans are gonna do that. And so, you know, is there anything innately wrong with the idea that everyone's under one banner and doing things for the greater good? No. Is someone going to rebel against that? Yeah, I think people will fall in line. But that's just my opinion, of course.
Yeah. As someone who believes in original sin, as someone who believes that humans are flawed, but there's a lot of capability of becoming more than flawed, of actually learning to be good along the way. Any system of government, of leadership, or whatever, and is doomed to fail. Yep. You know why? Because I've studied history. It doesn't matter the form of government. It doesn't matter the most charismatic person in the world in charge to make people do the right thing. You know, maybe they do it for a time, but then they die, and someone else takes charge who isn't as up to the task, or maybe the first person wasn't up to the task, and you were ignoring their flaws because it made you feel good that they were doing some things that made you feel good.
It's the blind leading. It's those flawed people leading flawed people. And so eventually you will. And again, even if you're not theologically based, you know, if you just think in your mind that humans are just selfish, I mean, and that could tie into original sin. Those things are not mutually exclusive. But if you think about these flawed folks who are leading the flawed, like eventually their flaws are going to show through. And it's what the people below, when the chinks in the armor start to show, what do the people below them start to do? You know, they say, oh, that person's just like us. And as soon as someone becomes just like us, you know, I think it's hard to just blindly follow someone.
I think the other part too is that it's just that human desire to rule your own life in mm-hmm. whatever, which way, shape, or form you want to do it. That's literally been the story since the beginning of told to do one thing and then you do the other because, well, I want to do that. I want to be in control. I want to be God. You know, I want to be the one who makes the decisions and be right to do it because I said so. And that's another flaw that comes into the system. And yeah, I'm not one of those people who's anti-human, who's anti the belief that anything good can ever be done in the world. But I want to be honest with the self-assessment of humanity and say, no, it's never going to work while humans are in charge because humans are flawed. And humans are imperfect. So any system we make is going to be flawed and imperfect. That doesn't mean we shouldn't strive to be better. I mean, there's a reason I want to work in a church, you know, because there is no perfect church out there, but I can make it better. I can work along other side people who are attempting to work to do good in the world, to love others well, and to love God well. So I think the central premise of, is it so wrong to want to control the world? Yes, because it puts us in the wrong position. And yes, it's a Christian show, but at the end of the day, like it's whether I'm putting God on the throne or me on the throne. And when I put me on the throne, things are inherently flawed.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you on all of those points. I think that, you know, we should always strive. It will come across that I have a low view of humanity, but it doesn't mean I'm not pro-human. Those are different things. I'm a teacher after all. So I wake up every morning and try to make the world a better place in my own little way. So I don't, you know, I have hope for us. It's just that it can get a little, our own sort of inherent selfishness can get a little overwhelming at times. But I think if we can push against that, you know, and as you said, try to make it a better place in terms of, you know, egalitarianism and trying to make, you know, for the greater good sort of thing, I think that I honestly think that's the reason why we do what we do, you know, whether you're a theologian, you're in the church, whether you're not religious, whether you're, you know, working for a nonprofit or you're a teacher or whatever, fill in the blank. Like, I mean, we ain't doing it for the paycheck or the power, you know? And if that's sort of what drives a lot of humanity, which we do see that it does, you know, the people who do pick up those sort of bits, I think are people who are kind of going against what you may call human nature or, you know, what is expected by society sort of thing. I was supposed to be a medical doctor, Christian.
Oh, wow.
I would have been okay at it, but but here I am.
That's not what I want to see in my doctors. Which one am I going to go to? Oh, the okay one.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm being humble here, I mean, yeah. The okay one. You know what? I feel pretty good about the surgery, but, you know.
Your odds are 50-50. You know, I'm a pretty okay doctor.
You're a pretty okay doctor. Well, I'm an excellent theologian, so there we go.
There you go. There you go. So one of the things that's also brought up in this show, and the franchise as a whole, too, is like most of the games are pretty gray and gray. Some people would argue Fallout 4 is a little too nice. I can see the arguments, but I think ultimately it contains the spirit of, you know, humans make decisions. Sometimes they're not always the right decisions, but are we inherently selfish? Can we ever do good things in a world? Like, where does that morality come from? And this is shown really in the show with Lucy and the ghoul, Cooper Howard. He has been someone who's lived for over 200 years, and he has seen the very worst of humanity before the bombs and after the bombs. She, meanwhile, grew up in a rather prosperous place, free of radiation, underground, where her every need was attended to. And now she's up on the surface world trying to bring the good things she learned there, like the golden rule and stuff like that. But she's living now in a surface world that doesn't believe in those things. So, like, and they pretty much continue to laugh at her. So, like, how do we, you know, not living in a post-apocalyptic wasteland quite yet, continue to be good in a world that laughs in the face of that ideal?
Yeah. I'm surprised she goes up there. How do they live? I have one question. How do they live so long, those ghouls?
It's the science part. You know, okay. Radiation is magic, essentially, and can do it whatever it wants.
Oh, it's
it can,
not. Okay.
No. Yeah. It can turn a bear, a giant. Yeah.
Okay. It's a part of the system. It's fine.
Yes.
The world they've created. How do we keep doing good when people, I think you need a strong group of people around you. Like, I think we see that there's always a merry band of followers in all of these shows where people are doing good. And I do think that's important because we as humans are very capable of, you know, getting discouraged or faltering in this sort of mission that we might have of doing good in the world or trying to do good. We need other people to keep us going, you know, and I think that could be a TV show, that could be a podcast. I mean, I have Christy Whaley, who's my band of merry band of person. She does a podcast with me as well. But she's also someone that I can talk to when things are getting a bit grim and in the world. And I was telling her, you know, just watching Stranger Things, actually, you know, it could be a TV show. Watching that made me feel a little bit better about the world that we were living in, because I was like, here are these kids who have very little resources. And like, they're just really, really trying to fight the good fight and fight against this evil that they have, you know, a collective evil. And so I think that's important. I think having travelers alongside you is important, and having people who will, because we are going to get discouraged. Like, I don't think that's a win. Yeah. So I think having other people around you to sort of be like, this is what we're doing is important. Like, because you can put in, and then, like, you know, you may not get anything back for your whole life. You know, on my little shelf here, I have like I've been teaching for like 16. I have like 5 or 6 notes that students have sent in 16 years, you know, but that's okay. And those notes are up there, and I'll look at them every once in a while when I'm having a bad day. And so I think that's, you've got to surround yourself in whatever version of encouragement that could be human or otherwise. I think that's the most important bit.
That's an extremely great point, because it is so very tempting to think that you're always right, to think that if you say something, it must be true, and to go out and try and live that way, even if you were right, is a terrible way to live, because by definition, you're alone. Trying to reach out to other people, like, it's possible. I mean, we see it countless times throughout history, throughout scripture, people going to other people who are definitely an other, and then reaching them with truth, reaching them with good things, and something being done with that. But you also see the exact opposite of it being rejected and people being threatened with death or actually being murdered for it, for trying to help people. So what are you supposed to do? Well, I mean, you know, Paul didn't go alone on his missionary trips. It Barnabas with them to help out there. They get Luke along the way, Timothy along the way. Like, they build things up, because, like you said, it can be very difficult when you're alone, especially when you're surrounded by people who don't think the same way you do. But I think not more important than not being alone, is to make sure that you have a solid enough foundation So yeah, you can get like shaken, stirred a little bit by something that goes your way. But if you're grounded in that truth, grounded in love, like it's a lot harder for you to be knocked down. And so that attracts other people who would also like to live that way, who would also like to think that way. Maybe they're already around you. Maybe you can find them. But in the show itself, like it's one of those things. Lucy is so wide-eyed idealist for her own good, is that you also need someone who's experienced the bad to kind of temper those. And a ghoul isn't a good man by any stretch of the imagination. But he's helping her learn about what the wasteland is like. Like, look, you have those good ideals and morals, but this is the reality you're facing here. So how are you going to handle it? You know, if someone's shooting at you, are you just going to try and kneecap them, or are you actually going to take them out knowing it would be better for everyone else if that raider or what have you didn't live anymore to hurt someone else? And those are deep questions to ask. We thank God we don't live in that scenario right now. But if we were, like, how would I answer that question? What would my foundation be to establish why I could be okay answering as I did?
Well, but in some ways, I think we do live in that world. The questions are maybe slightly different, but they are, yes, at the core kind of similar, you know. And, you know, what sort of, you know, what are we willing to do for the greater good? You know, the sort of train, I always think about that psychological train scenario where you get willing to go.
What is the name of that thing? Trolley problem.
There you go. Trolley problem. And so I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we are faced with some of those questions. We're just not in a fallout scenario. And, you know, what do we do in the face of that? We're not, as you said, not yet.
Hopefully never. But I mean, if it happens, it happens. God's still sovereign either way. All right. So my last bit here.
Yep.
For fallout is, as someone who's been in the fandom for quite some time, I have seen through many fandoms, not just this one, when a new adaptation comes out, there's always going to be that contingent of fans who say, this is ruined forever because of XYZ. There's always going to be that group of people that say, this is the greatest thing ever because of XYZ. There's going to be other people in the middle who go, I like this, I'm not big on that. But you know what? Ultimately, I like it. I like to think of myself as the middle option more often than not. Whether that's true or not, that's open for debate. But one thing we've seen here is that a lot of people are angry because at the end of New Vegas, the game that a lot of this is based around, all the factions that you can join with ultimately have fallen short of where they could have been. Like, House is seemingly dead. Maybe at best he's an AI. The NCR, they got nuked. Their capital got nuked. And now it looks like they're fracturing into different, you know, factions. Caesar's Legion was never a good option, but some people would say that. Has gone into a civil war after the death of Caesar, their leader. And the independent option is gone because no one's in charge of New Vegas anymore. So I say, you've invalidated my decisions. And because you had to tell your story, you wanted things to be bad in the world. There's no hope for the world or anything. So that's some of the arguments. There are plenty of others I could bring up. But like, do you think on this idea, are fan bases inherently unpleasable?
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's the easiest question I've had today. Absolutely. We are. But here's the reason why we hold so precious to stuff, and it means something to us. And also, I do think, especially in a lot of these fandoms, like, you know, they get us through things. You know, I just talked about Stranger Things. Now, there are parts I don't love about that ending. And it kind of hurt me in the heart a little bit sometimes. Like, I'm going to talk about this when I talk about School Spirits, actually, in the Lynchian connection. But it's one of those things where, you know, they become a crutch for us in a positive way, I would say, but it could be a negative way too, in the sense that it's propping us up in a world that is very chaotic and very, you know, not so nice sometimes. And they inspire and they excite us, and they're kind of like friends that we can go to at the end of the day and, you know, sit with. But the issue with that is anything that we lean upon in that way is never going to be able to live up to the standard that we need to keep us going, actually. And so, yeah, no, I've never had a series finish. I think I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to reflect a little bit back in like 10 minutes. I'll tell you if it's true. I don't think that there's ever been a series that has ended where I've been perfectly happy. Have you had one? I mean, like, perfect, like, where you would change Not a single thing.
That's an excellent question. Like, not even Deep Space Nine. I'm not big on how the Cisco ending was. Oh, man, I'd have to think about that one. Recently, I will say I finished Expedition 33, which is a very fun video game. I've talked before about how it deals with grief and trauma. And I will say, maybe it's just honeymoon phase because I just finished it, but I am completely satisfied with that ending based off of everything that was built up in the game. But anything else? Return of the Jedi, for me, it's not a flawless film, but as far as the ending, yeah, I am 100% satisfied with how things go down. And that's one reason why I don't like the sequel trilogy. But that's something, and I've said that I don't say that people should take a drink, but I'm sure there's a drinking game out there built around that. Has Christian mentioned the sequel trilogy and how much he hates it? Oh, there you go. Ding. Yeah.
Well, but I think that so there's a couple that came to mind. Like I was saying, Sopranos. Like I think that to me was a perfect ending. However, people really don't like that. A lot of people, they're very upset about it. And so it would be interesting. This is my academic. It would be interesting to take the ones we did find satisfying and to see The Good Place. And that was a good ending. I liked it. The Good Place ending. But to take the ones that we liked and to see if there's like a common thread about, and that probably says more about us than the series itself.
I don't like ambiguity, but ultimately it doesn't affect my feelings on the series as a whole. I'm not big on the choice that was made, but like it's still, I don't feel like my time was wasted just because I got an ambiguous ending in that regard. There have been other things out there when definitely like, okay, tell me what happened. I'm not happy. Give me like information. So yeah. So,
go ahead. I want to watch The Leftovers, like that show. I've never seen it, but I think I want to see it really, really badly. And not at all because I have a crush on that guy, but maybe a little bit. What's his name? Justin Theroux. But also, yes. I know that it ended before it was supposed to end, i.e. they canceled it, basically. And so I'm really hesitant to watch it because I get really invested in TV shows. And I know that it didn't end properly or the way they wanted it to. Or even in a sad, I don't know. I've not seen it, but I know it didn't end when it was supposed to. So that really puts me off sometimes with shows as if they didn't get their ending. But The Good Place, I liked that. Have you seen The Good Place, Christian?
No, I have not. I know Pastor Will really loves it. I'm sure there was someone else who was on that episode or talked about it at least before.
It has a satisfying ending. I think the idea was they knew where, they didn't keep it going. And I think that's
key. Yeah.
It didn't go on.
Yeah. Well, to go back to the original question, yeah, I'm with you. Like, fan base is inherently unpleasable because you've got a myriad of opinions. Mm-hmm. You know, some more right than others, but you know what? That's still their opinion. So when something gets, a new game is introduced or a new movie is made in a trilogy or franchise or what have you, there's always going to be the detractors who didn't like it because they were already upset about the first film, or someone who didn't like a change that was made, or maybe you changed the lore or a character, got a new actor or something like that. By its very nature, there's no such thing as like 100% great fan base, because there's always going to be at least that one guy who's got to be the one to say, this is why you're wrong. This is why I'm more enlightened than you. Yeah. So I'm not saying that everyone who has a gripe against the series is wrong. Let me state that perfectly clear, because I do have some gripes, that would be extremely hypocritical of me to say that if you have a gripe against something, that means you're wrong. but I think there's a way to say it better. There's a way to state your opinion better than saying you've ruined my childhood or this is trash. Anyone who thinks it's good is trash. That learn how to speak well. Be more eloquent in like your taking down of something you don't like.
Process things through critical thinking lenses. Take some classes with me and you can learn all about critical or just listen to Systematic Ecology. Also learn critical thinking. I would argue.
Yes. So as far as rating and reviewing, I guess it's a solid 9.95 for me. If the series keeps going as well as it is, it may end up as a 10 one day. But for right now, I think a 9 is pretty solid. So we talked enough about my.
That's pretty high. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I rate things out of 10 because it gives me more numbers than out of 5. I always feel like that's not enough. And I feel bad giving things like 3. It feels like I don't like it. So
do you, man?
Yeah. that was Fallout. We're moving on to the third season, if I remember correctly from what I read, of School Spirit. So Leah, can you explain what is School Spirit? How'd you get into it? What do you like about it?
We just wanted to take a moment to ask you all to consider sponsoring our show. You can do so by becoming a member in the website down in the show's description. It takes a lot to keep this show running as far as editing equipment, paying the site that platforms our show to all the different mediums where you listen to your podcast, going to events. There's a lot of cost behind this. And I was thinking of the most fun way to do this ad, and I was going to do like, you know, one of those songs where it's like, there's a log on the lake. And then by the end, it's like there's a speck in the eye of the flea on the log on the lake or something. Then I realized that would just take too long, and I don't want to bore you guys. I'm going to list some of the benefits you can get for being a member as a thank you to those who do take some of their funds to help sponsor our show. At the free tier, you get some perks, including like free episodes. Yeah, you don't even have to pay to get extra content that goes along with our annual theme, or even in collaboration with the Rethinking Faith, we're going to be doing Rethinking Comics, and you can get that on our website if you want to follow that series. As you move up to some of the paid tiers, you get access to exclusive merch only for our sponsors. You get access to the bonus questions we do each thing, and all kinds of things that are like shout outs for all tiers. You can get a shout out on the episode. All of the tiers come with some incredible benefits. As you go through some of the different ones moving up, you know, you get different percent off of our merchandise. We just straight up give you money towards purchasing stuff. Some of the tiers just get $10 a month to buy stuff from us. We do free giveaways. Some of the tiers come with birthday presents, Christmas presents, free t-shirt for our members. There are lots of things that we do because we just want to show our appreciation for those who are able to take their funds and sponsor our show. But we also want to remind you, whether or not you can financially support the show, we appreciate everyone who takes their time to listen to this. Remember that verse that's like, perhaps you're here for a time such as this. Well, perhaps you're here for a time such as sponsoring our show, or perhaps you're not here to listen to ads, and I should wrap this up.
Got it.
Yeah, we're in the second. The third season comes out next week.
Okay.
So it's already filmed. It's on the book. So if you want something to binge where like you don't have to wait a year or 2 years for it to come out again, then this is a good one. So how did I came across it just through, I mean, advertisements and wanting to binge something that already existed. I've been watching a lot of like, I sort of lean towards the like Wednesday, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like sort of supernatural, but legacies, Vampire Diaries, but things that are like, when I'm talking about binging and like eating food and like drinking wine, and it's not gonna like make me think too hard, because my whole entire life is thinking very, very hard. And I do like those series, like where I have to really wrestle with the big, like The Good Place, the big questions, you know. But then sometimes I just want to sit there and watch some vampires that are attractive run around, and I think that's okay too. So this is, that definitely falls into this category. So when they advertised it, there was another show that had come out where it was like basically ghosts that are stuck in a school and they're like hanging out. And I'm not sure what it was called, but I'd seen it, and I just wasn't really interested in it. But the way they presented School Spirits is that it was more of like a murder mystery. Like it was like they were trying to figure out like what happened. And to me, I was like very into that. So the premise essentially is, because Twin Peaks, by the way, is my favorite TV show of all time. And so anything that has this sort of like, show. If it's great, if you want to get me, have an underlying mystery, a band of kooky characters, and we're just working towards this mystery, but then there's also other things happening at the same time, but the mystery stays as perfect. I'm in. Many people have tried to recreate, that's why I was talking about the Lynchian stuff, they've tried to recreate it, you know, you've got your Riverdale, you've got your Lost, and they'll admit it, and they make references to it. In fact, School Spirits makes reference to it as well. Their very last episode of the second season is called, they like to do puns on TV shows, and it's called Fire Talk With Me. It's the very last episode, which, of course, if you know Lynch, is Fire Walk With Me is one of the Twin Peaks universe movies that he did. Yes. So anyway, the premise of the show is that there's a high school called Split River High School. And essentially, this young girl named Maddie goes to the high school. She's got two best friends. They're kind of outcasts. They like hate everything. We were Converse, so we hate everything, you know, that kind of thing. And they're a little stereotypical. But so so she ends up waking up from this kind of dream one day after school. And all of a sudden she's with this other group of characters, but they're all dead. They're ghosts, and they live within the school, and they can't, they in fact can't leave the premise of the school. There's a fence that keeps them in, essentially. And if they try to run past this fence, it basically takes them back to the part within the school that they died. So that's the key bit within all of this, that they died on the school camp. Yes. The issue with Maddie is that, well, she's new, so all of this is new to her, and she can't figure out how she died. Everyone else remembers how they died. But to her, she can't remember, and she can't figure out. All she knows is that when she runs off campus, she ends up in the boiler room of school. So she knows where she died. She just can't figure out what happened.
How?
Right. And there's a teacher there. And then most of the other people are students that are ghosts. And then there's some ghosts that are unaware that they're ghosts. So there's the marching band that just does this like little loop. Because their school bus like crashed into something at the school, but they're still practicing because what is it called? The person that directs the marching band, the drum major. Yeah, they didn't die in the school bus accident, so they're left without their leader. So they're just perpetually on this loop trying to figure out this song. So the other ghosts will go up to them and be like, "Hey, like, come, like, let's talk about stuff. Let's hang out, like." You're dead, and they just keep on looping. So the whole the show is really, it's this underlying mystery of, you know, what happened to Maddie? How did she die? Like, what is, who killed? And of course, there's all these red herrings of like, this person did it. And one of the key bits of the story, because this no one, by the way, in the school can see the ghosts. That's a big part of it. And you can't, the ghosts can't manipulate or like move things or like, if they like rip something off the wall, it appears again. Like they can't do anything to the world except for Maddie's best friend can somehow see her, but only her, and can talk to her. And that becomes a real question too about why this person is able to see and hear her. And so he's essentially helping her solve this mystery along with this band of ghosts and then her like real life human friends. And so we're in the second season. It's a pretty low level show in terms of there's some like sexual innuendos and some violence, but like it's not going to like keep you up at night. Like I'd put it at a solid PG-13. Like it's not really like, but I'm very intrigued by it. And I think it's really, they did well with the characters. Like you're very invested because there's all these, especially the ghosts. Like there's some from like, there's this high school guy called Wally who was from the 80s and he loves 80s music, but he's a teenager and he like broke his neck on the football field. He didn't even really want to play football, but his mom really wants. So there's a lot of like angst and backstory and we're trying. And also they're really working towards crossing over. So there is some sort of like theological elements is that they're trying to figure out why are we stuck here? That's another big. Because I will say very early on, one of the ghosts does cross. And so they start to figure out, they're trying to figure out like, why did she get to cross over and not, why are we still here? So there's some theological elements to it as well. So there's a lot of mysteries and they've done well here, I think, by creating these mysteries so that it keeps you going. Because I think if it was just the mystery of who killed Maddie, I don't know that people would hang on that long. I think that you had to have this, you know, this group of characters that you cared about what happened to them and sort of the mystery of the school. Because the teacher at one stage says there's something about the school that none of y'all realize. And so that's another mystery that we're trying to work out. Too. So
it's an idea kind of being like, if you had died elsewhere, maybe you would have moved on. But like because you died at the school, something is keeping you here that is preventing what would otherwise happen. And is a reason you're fenced in, which I like having not seen a single episode, solely based off of your testimony. this sounds very intriguing. I love the idea of returning to the spot where you died and having a limited range because that establishes a little bit of weaknesses for our main character and that she just can't go fly off anywhere and figure out and investigate. Well, this guy was with me like an hour before I maybe died. Let me go look at him. Maybe she can only do it at school. I haven't, once again, not seen anything. I love as well the idea of multiple people being our characters here. Like the Twin Peaks analogy made there is kind of perfect. Of seeing like, yeah, the driving mystery is like, you know, who killed Laura Palmer? Who killed Maddie? But here we get a bunch of people like, how did they die? What are the circumstances? Why would they not be able to move on? But this one character could. What was it about her that's so different? Could we replicate that? So yeah, I am intrigued.
Yeah. And the other characters you care about, I think that's the biggest thing too, is that you have to care what happens. So like Maddie's mom is a recovering alcoholic. And like the mystery of where she went and if she's ever coming home is keeping her sober. And so Maddie has to wrestle with the fact that, like, you know, if I did exist, would she still be an alcoholic if I was still in her world? Like, you know, and there's all this other stuff too. Like, it's this world of characters that while you do care about Maddie and what happens, sometimes when the other characters are on the screen, you care more about that. So, you know, yeah. For me, I'm obsessed with the Wally character. I think he's such a sweet, sweet character. And so when he's on, I'm like, Maddie, just go find your mystery. I want to see what Wally has to say. He's dancing to like David Bowie. He has a high school reunion and it's all, and they have all gotten older, see, and no one can see him. But he goes to these reunions. He's class of 1984. And all these people are like, a, you know, in their whatever, like 50s, 60s, whatever. And he's still 18 and he's going to this reunion and they're all have their kids and they, or, you know, whatever, and they've moved on and he's sort of stuck there just dancing to David Bowie.
So you said something like they don't even know where Maddie's body is. She's officially a missing person.
By the end of season one, you don't know where her body is. By the end of this should tell you that the last episode of the season one is called Maddie. Where is Maddie's body?
That's another a good swerve there too. Not only does Maddie not know where she is, she's not even able to know that. Hey, people know where my body is, or they could be doing, you know, trying to solve my murder. Well, you can't. I mean, you can do it without a body. Nobody, no crime doesn't exist so much anymore in the world. You can still prosecute people based on that. But yeah. That's another good element.
But
there.
She had a really rough childhood. And so everyone's like, maybe she just ran away. Like, yep. And because
that's a common excuse.
Yeah. And so you're not, we know watching it, something happened, but the rest of the characters that are in the world, like at one stage, her friend, Simon is his name, who can see her and talk to her. He's the only person. He thinks he's going crazy. So he quits going to see her because he's like, I'm going nuts. Like I'm seeing this person that nobody else can see. And that feels like a me problem and not that you are a ghost. And so she's like, no, no, no. And that's her one link to the outside world. So she's like, no, 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 don't go, go, no, please, please. You're not crazy. He's like, that's what my crazy brain would. He said, tell me something that my brain wouldn't know already. And that's how she proved that she's real, I guess.
But there's also something really compelling behind the idea of she's the only one he can see. Not the other ghosts, because normally if in any other scenario, they would be a psychic and naturally would see ghosts anyway. So they could deal with the other characters. But now that drives a further wedge and that only her is the only person he can be with.
Oh, and it causes the other side. Really, they start to get annoyed at that because they're like, why is she able to have this outside link and we can't? And then, you know, and he's supposed to go off to college and it's just like, it's high school stuff in a way, but it's compelling.
Oh, something you said sparked my memory. Kyle MacLachlan is Hank in Fallout. So good old Dale Cooper is in the Wasteland.
Agent Dale Cooper.
Yes.
I do love him. I do love him. He was Lynch's, one of his muses, him and Laura Dern. So, Oh, so, well, that gives me more. Although the idea that Kyle is now a dad probably could be a granddad.
Yeah. Right. Anything else you want to add about School Spirits? Where can people find it?
They can find it on, I watched it on Paramount Plus, if you have that, but I think it's on HBO Max. I mean, again, whatever. I just Google it, I think, but I watched it on Paramount Plus. So if you have that,
okay.
I think it's on multiple platforms.
Right. So for our first two seasons, like out of 10, where do you think you're going to rate them at?
By the end of season one, I would have rated it an 8. Okay. I'm going season 2, if you combine, I'm going to say a 7.5 out of 10. They have to keep it going. And so they do reveal quite a bit at the end of season, if you want to. And it's up again, as we talked about before, I found it less than satisfying, though still compelling enough for me to continue watching it and be excited, but like maybe not in the upper echelon of 10 out of 10.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So we reached the end of the episode here. Leah, do you have, like, out of everything we discussed today, lightning round, main topics, what do you think is going to be your top recommendation for everyone to go check out?
Ooh, out of everything. I mean, your show sounds really interesting. I kind of want to go watch that. I've not played the video games, but like the whole idea that sort of is like, I kind of like that world that you're describing. I mean, I do recommend School Spirit. I mean, I think those would be my two. I will say, I was thinking a little bit in my back mind about the things that we don't like. And I think one of the things I don't like is in a universe when they break the rules. This is my type A personality. And so I think, yes. Or they create new rules that make it easier for the story to move along. School Spirit suffers that a little bit, but it's a new show. So they're creating a universe, you know, they're not necessarily manipulating it. They're creating it. So I gave them a little bit of leeway. However, I don't love that. And I think fans get a little bent out of shape about that in terms of when you start to mess with the rules. So as long as Fallout doesn't mess too much with the rules that it has created, I would be excited. Does it, though? Because I would be excited.
I think it's open to interpretation. I would argue mostly no.
Okay, fair enough. Because if you're just like, oh, you know, this doesn't matter anymore. You're like, well, I've invested in this mattering. Like, yes. This is part of the tension. As you said, tension. This is part of the tension. So in my mind, yep. I think you advertised that show well. I want to go watch it.
Not a paid sponsorship. It could be. No. If you want to throw it our way, Amazon. Which is where it's on. For me, actually, yeah, I mean, I guess I'll be stereotypical and I'll pick your choice for School Spirits because I knew nothing about this coming in outside of the paragraph that I read beforehand on the synopsis. And now I've gotten an intriguing mystery and it sounds like multiple characters. And you said Twin Peaks. And of course, how could I say no to that? So yeah, I'm going to throw that out as my recommendation.
Twin Peaks, also not spot.
All right. So thank you guys for listening on this one. If you were live on YouTube, you know, it was great to have you in the chat with us. So moving on from there, I just want to thank some sponsors of the show. And if you want to hear your name being read out loud, you can head over to Fourth Wall, Systematic Ecology. A link will be down in the description below from the podcast for you to check that out. If you think we're worthy of your money, we'd love to have it. It helps make things a lot easier on editing and getting the show done well and reaching out new people and advertising. So I'd like to thank some sponsors of the show. Thank you very much to Ethan Overcash, Austin Nance, Amber Riley, Jonathan Augustine, Gunnar Bergram, and Frank Proglauer. Thank you very much. And if I butchered any of your names, blame Joshua. It was definitely his fault. So remember, we're all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Podcast fam, want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you'll feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
Hello, Systematic Ecology listeners. This is Kevin here. Just want to give a brief ad for some of the other podcasts in our Anazal podcast network. First of all, off is Let Nothing Move You by Christian Ashley, in which Christian goes through the Bible one chapter at a time and gives his thoughts there. There is also the Bible After Hours, which is a more progressive take on the Bible that tries to challenge the status quo with satire and looks at theology. The host uses the pseudonym, the Foulmouth Preacher. And as a bonus, Joshua Knoll does the voices for this one. So definitely check that one out. And also, and we'll laugh about that later, is the newest podcast that our own Will Rose is starting, where he will interview friends about a story they had that wasn't funny at the time, but that they laugh about now. So definitely check out these shows and subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thank you very much.